Well, let's stay in the South and bring in Angie Maxwell, director of the Diane Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society. She's also an associate professor of political science at the University of Arkansas. Angie, your thoughts on what you just heard from North Carolina?
Well, Tanya, thank you for having me. As someone who studies and specializes in the South, to hear so many Southern states too close to call, as disappointing as that may be to some, it's just a huge shift from when we would hear North Carolina, Georgia called immediately red. The fact that, you know, Texas and North Carolina and Georgia, you know, came so close is a testament to the Democratic infrastructure being built there. But just as the Republican Party took four decades to flip the South from blue to red, it's a long game and a long effort. And so that's what, you know, we're witnessing today.
Okay, so you don't necessarily see this as a big setback because the margins are just so close.
You know, personally, and I know that, you know, I'm also kind of a deep reader in Southern history, to think that Georgia, in the middle of a pandemic with voter suppression, you know, in a kind of extreme form, is too close to call and might, you know, turn blue, is just a remarkable, you know, accomplishment to the organizers in that state. And the same thing in Texas. You know, this is a slow and hard process, and it's never one candidate. It is cycle after cycle of building infrastructure. County captains, precinct captains, get out the vote efforts, data, all of that. You know, and it's just really tough. And I'm encouraged by the turnout and those efforts, you know, because once Texas and places like Georgia, once they do get over that hump and start flipping blue, I mean, it's a whole different ballgame, but it's, you know, it's not going to be easy.
Well, let me ask you more about that. So you're saying like this could be several decades in the making. It's a long game, essentially. Mm-hmm. But what does the Democratic hope of flipping Southern states blue look like for future elections? What do Democrats have to do?
Well, first and foremost, if you look at what has already been done in places like Virginia, and which is, you know, 12 years of efforts of progressive organizing, you're 10 years deep in North Carolina, you're about 4 years deep in Texas. You're seeing it emerge in other states starting to collect data. You know, the South is very difficult to assess, you know, where people lean because it did realign during people's lifetime. Mm-hmm. Or even in states like Arkansas where, you know, 80% of people are the optional party, right? And so we don't have good data on the South because we haven't had contested elections consistently for decades, which help build those voter files. Polls often undersample the South. So we need data, and we need people running in every race. If the Southern strategy, or as I call it, the long Southern strategy by the GOP, was top down, flipping it back to blue is going to be bottom up.
I understand all of what you're saying, and data is so important in this equation, as you mentioned. But, you know, during the summer, I spoke with you about former President Richard Nixon and the phrase, the silent majority, after Trump had actually tweeted, the vast silent majority is alive and well, back in June. You told us that Trump supporters are anything but silent. So how do the results you've seen so far fit in with that idea of the silent or shy Trump voter?
Oh, it's a great question. So the polls in the South had Georgia, Texas, and North Carolina neck and neck. If you looked at the voter registration in Florida and the increase in Republican registrations, I personally think Florida is still competitive, but it's moving towards, you know, red, where Texas's, you know, momentum is kind of towards blue. So in that sense, I don't think the polling was that off. But the one thing that in the South, but the one factor that I don't think has gotten enough attention is just as looking over, you know, elections cycle after cycle, the idea that, you know, so many millions of people voted absentee. And then like we were hearing about North Carolina, that people requested it and then might have changed their mind, and how many outstanding provisional ballots and all of, I mean, we're talking about 1-point margins. You know, those factors are just institutionally not something we've dealt with, and they are very, very tough.
I mean, right. What does it tell you about the polarization in this country? I mean, where do we go from here, Angie?
Well, I think the one thing I would say, and I'm not just leaning so heavily on data, but tailoring, right? You know, what works in Georgia and what works in North Carolina is different than what works in Texas. You know, one of the things that has to be done is we need that local knowledge. A lot of times we have organizers from outside of the South come in, right, and help organize. But it's the people on the ground that know that state, like the Stacey Abrams and the Beto O'Rourke's, that need to build something within the state, you know, and have. Because what works in one place doesn't necessarily work somewhere else. So North Carolina had like 1.2 million voters who didn't vote in 2016. Georgia didn't have that, but had a higher, you know, African-American turnout. It's got to be state specific.
Angie Maxwell, director of the Diane Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society and associate professor of political science at the University of Arkansas. Thank you for this conversation.
Thank you, Tanya.